Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks. Oh,
you're good.
Okay, I'm used to hearing it, so I'm sorry. Restart.
Yeah,
making sure.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Jacob's here.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. So normally, like, we would do like a live show on YouTube, but we're right in the middle of some pretty I don't want to say frantic, but we're very busy right now. Like, next week starts Preview Guide, and then I am in the middle of planning another manga guide. So we're going to, like, in the spring we did this big spring manga guide where we reviewed, like, 3 months' worth of books. Like, it was, last time it was, like, April, May, and June books. I think this time we're doing October, November, December books. We should have four contributors this time. And a bigger selection of books. I'm right in the middle of planning this, which is what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm busy putting the crew together and getting all the books together and all that stuff. So look forward to that, I guess. I'm excited to launch that again. We got real good feedback last time, so I'm hoping it goes.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. I thought it was a really good idea, and I'm like, oh, I'm
it's useful for me. Like, I could sit there and read through their reviews and then decide which volume ones I'm going to read. Because I read a lot of volume ones. Like,
oh, you do?
We get books in from, like, Kodansha and Yen Press. And if there's a volume one, I will take it out and read it.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
See, I'm
depending, not everything, but most volume ones, I will go through the box and read them.
I'm so bad with manga, like, I only, like, if it, I have to be, like, really obsessed with the story, and then I'll read a manga, but, like, I read it to, like, its conclusion, but I don't just, like, sample and move on. For some reason, I can't do it.
I find it also helps me a lot with the pilot season, like, so,
well, it does.
Pilot season is such a weird...
It's an old phrase.
It's just an old phrase. It helps me with the new season, because oftentimes nowadays the catch-up is so good. Like Yen Press will put out half a dozen volume ones, and of those, four of them have shows coming out.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
So, like, I have, like, Land of the Lustrious sitting out there, and, like, Kakaguya have that, and, like all that stuff. Like, we get it in pretty much when the anime's debuting.
Well, yeah.
Or if not a month before, so.
Well, and it's funny, because I remember from the last manga guide, like, everything, you know, you don't remember everything that the reviewers covered, but I remember the most positively covered thing was Suridora Children, and that's, I would say, one of the most liked anime of this season, and the most hated thing was Aho Girl, which has been, like,
one of the most hated things.
Well, no, actually, it's been one of the most, like, actually, you guys should be checking out this wonderful trash sort of a thing. But, like, we're not covering it, not only because it's not short, but, like, I attempted to watch it because I heard it was absolute trash, and it is, I think it's unwatchable, personally. But if you're...
I mean, look, I read the reviews.
If you have high tolerance for the trash, like, okay, I thought it was unwatchable.
I read the reviews of the manga, and it sounded like the worst thing.
It is, I tried to watch it, like, I tried to watch the show, and I'm like, I can't with this. Like, this is, like... just the worst. Anyway, but, like, yeah, so it gives you a little bit of a hint as to what's coming up in the anime season. And then, for my part, so you've been working on the manga guide and getting all that together, and I've been going through, we've been processing a glut of interviews from various events over the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been processing most of those, the grand majority of those, and we're still putting them up, like, stuff from events from weeks ago, and still getting approvals on them. So those keep coming, and we're heading into fall, and we're going to keep running This Week in Anime through the fall, and we're planning... we're, like, trying to wrap up, like, what are the summer shows we want to talk about most before we move into, like, talking about stuff from fall, like, but without, like, with only one episode to go on. So we're trying to talk about stuff that has continuations, and so that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, and right now we're also putting together all the editorials for you know, best and worst of the summer and most anticipated fall, like, all that stuff is happening right now. Busy times. Good times. Busy times. But so we wanted to talk a little. This is just mostly just going to be mailbag show. We didn't want to I'm really tired of taking weeks off because we're too busy to do the podcast. So it's just easy to do these mailbag shows, you know, and talk a little bit about some stuff we've been watching.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really been keeping up with my summer anime. I'm even behind on Made in Abyss, which I feel bad about. I want to get to it. I actually don't know what happens. Somehow, I managed to just stay unspoiled on this stuff. It's because anytime I see a discussion, I just don't read it. I don't read it. I don't click on it. I'm like, I'll get to it.
I don't think people have been openly discussing what happens in public. It's just been, like, you just see people going, and
yeah.
You're like, well, I'm not going to click through to find out what that is.
I'm just saying, like, I haven't been spoiled on anything in a long, like, not even Game of Thrones. Like, really? I was behind on Game of Thrones by, like, an episode, and I managed to not get spoiled on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just telling you, like, it's possible if you don't want to get spoiled on things.
Right.
The trick is to ignore it when people write about it.
That's true. Yeah, I'm very good at, I've been very successful at that. And and on that note, because that was something I had to do going into this past week. So one thing, we're going to run through some of the stuff we've been looking at recently and stuff like that. One thing we won't be discussing on this podcast is the newest Danganronpa game, because after I played it, we decided that we needed to do like a Danganronpa cast. So
yeah, you're
going to
do a full spoiler cast.
Mm-hmm. About the whole franchise.
Yeah, the game comes out next week and you want to give people a chance to play it.
Definitely. Like,
so,
give them 1 or 2 weeks to play it first and then.
A couple of weeks out, we'll do it. You'll do a spoiler cast. I did one of those for Nier. Sort of too long after it was vogue to do Nier spoiler cast, because there were a bunch of them like a couple months after. And then I did mine like 3 or 4 months after the game came out. But I'm looking at that should be good. I think that might be the first episode of Ancast that I am not on. Mm-hmm. That might be the very first one after 300 episodes, this show. Mm-hmm. That might be the first one that I am not part of, because I've never played. I want to play those games. Mm-hmm. You've talked about them so much and have made them sound so good,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of want to play them.
Yeah,
I think they're in your Steam library, so I can just do the family share.
Copy them over. Yeah, I'm not sure what you'll think of them. They are so... it's a weird combination of like,
I like really impassioned, crazy, like, here's my fucking art, here it is mashed in your face, and it sounds like that's what it is.
It is kind of, but like the art is like somebody like dropping their pants and waving their dick at you. But
that's
like,
great. I love
but,
that.
But it's really smart though. It's like the smartest poop jokes ever kind of a thing. Like,
I love it when someone
aggressive.
Drops their pants and wave. Okay.
Anyway, it's, but yeah, like,
literally and figuratively.
I was just talking about figuratively.
Just joking around. Yeah, that sounds cool. I read your review of that game. It sounded fucking bonkers. You told me about the whole thing like before the...
I spoiled
the,
it.
Yeah, you told me the whole thing before...
Because I kind of couldn't believe it as I was playing it, so I...
Yeah,
I
you were like out of breath.
Back. I would have held it back, but I was like, Zach, this is crazy.
Yeah.
So I can't talk about it now, but we will do a Danganronpa cast soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been playing a lot of video games myself. I just picked up that Final Fantasy IX remaster that came out on PS4, and it looks super good, and I'm, like, excited to play through that game again. I don't think I've played through it since, like... I loved it back in when it came out 17 fucking years ago or whatever, and it's been a really long time since I played through the whole thing, so... Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that. Those games... Every time when they re-release Final Fantasy games now, they give you a speed-up and a cheat feature, which, let me tell you,
yeah.
As a busy adult, it makes it possible to revisit the game.
Yeah.
It's what makes it possible, because I straight up don't have 60 hours to play through Final Fantasy VII again.
Mm-hmm.
I do have like 25 hours, which is about what you can do it in on the speed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing a few hours a day, hitting out on the weekends or whatever. You can get through the story like pretty good and refresh your memory and be like, okay, like now I can sort of put these in order of favorite to least favorite and like get my head around like which one of these ones really had an impact on me. Because those games were seminal for me and for a lot of people. And like, they're really long and have complicated stories and a lot of characters. And you think back on these, like, which one was really my favorite? Which one had a good story? Which one had memorable characters?
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, like, ranking Final Fantasy games is, like, important to me, I guess, and seems like it's important to a lot of people. So it's good to actually be able to go back and play through the games again.
Right.
It's nice. It's the only way it's possible is with the speed up.
Yeah,
and the
somebody,
cheating.
Somebody who's wholly unfamiliar, like Final Fantasy kind of passed me by as a kid and as a teen and stuff like that. And so there's like, I feel like there's ephemera from each game that everybody's familiar with. Like, is it Final Fantasy IV? It's the opening sequence is like, even if you don't know Final Fantasy, like you're familiar with that opening, the mech's opening sequence.
That's six.
Oh, that's six. Okay. Yeah. There was a titling.
The Magitek armor. Yeah, no, it was Final Fantasy II was, okay. You know what? Every nerd in the world.
Everybody knows this,
no,
just, so I, yeah.
Every nerd in the world gets really excited when someone doesn't know, so they can be like, actually, Final Fantasy II was Final Fantasy IV in Japan. Yeah. Final Fantasy III was Final Fantasy VI in Japan. Like, okay, you have to get really excited.
Okay, so it's, it's three in English. All right, well.
it was three in the U.S., but six in Japan.
Yeah, and for seven, like, seven is the one with the most mainstream cultural impact, and that the largest amount of things from it are, yes, like noobs to understand.
Also, then, having like been alive and growing up and buying video games at the time, it was, you bought Final Fantasy II and then Final Fantasy III and then Final Fantasy VII.
Because
it was still not released here, right, as six. It was after the fact they put it out as six.
Yeah, and then 10 is in close second place as far as like cultural penetration of stuff from it. But then like you in the middle, you have 8 and 9, and like very little is remembered from them. And if you're not,
eight,
if you're
no,
not
eight
fan.
Is eight was bigger, much bigger than nine. Eight had a much bigger impact. I would say
for people who didn't play the games.
Yeah, but you okay? That's still like your personal perspective and everything. And I'm just saying like eight had more cult. Nine was. 9 came out after the PS2 had been released. Like, it was considered kind of... Like, people liked it, and they really liked the story and everything.
I said 10. 9 is... I was not...
Well, you put 8 and 9 in the same box, and I'm saying I would put it, like, 7, 10, 8, and then a gulf, and then, like, 9, something like that.
Well, the only thing I was saying was, like, people remember...
8 is a terrible game. Anyway, go on.
Well, people... Like, if you haven't played the games, I feel like the things that, like, made an impact is the dance scene... And, like, gun blades is what people remember. And then 9, fucking nothing, except Vivi. Like, Vivi is the thing. And I'm like, I know what that is. And then the rest of it was like, I've never seen this before. What is this?
Yeah.
So it was weird, because it's like, every given Final Fantasy game, I'm like, oh, I know what this is, even though I've never played it. And 9 was just like, what is this foreign title? Oh, Final Fantasy?
Which
really?
Is weird, because 9 has, like, the best cast of those games.
I've heard that. I've heard that from everybody who plays the games. But it did not make... And I think it's because it has this, like... Like
it
at
has
the
this
time,
it has a precious moments aesthetic.
Teenagers were like one devil wing and one angel wing at the time, and
not anymore though.
Well, I mean that
they
we're
totally
in
still are.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. But like,
no, 8 was pretty boys and wing and feathers and melodramatic anime stuff, and 9 was
9 opens with a clown kingdom, tailed boy in a clown kingdom, and
it's
I'm
not
like,
a clown
okay,
kingdom. It's
I
just
can
a,
see how.
It's just a comically ugly lady and two Harlequin jesters.
Okay, well,
it's not
I was
really
like,
a clown
I was
king.
Like, God, what is this horrible clown king?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
well, I'm excited for you to see the story in that game because I'm excited to revisit it myself because it might not be as good as I remember it being. I remember it being fucking great. Like,
I've heard
really,
from a lot
really
of,
good
from a lot of diehards that it's the secret like best written.
It is the
like,
secret
you're
best
not
written
on that
one.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, it's fucking good. The dialogue and it's really, it's a great game. Anyway. Yo, dude, we watched this movie called Napping Princess.
We did.
By a filmmaker named Kenji Kamiyama, who also directed this show called Eden of the East.
And Ghost in the Shell.
And Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. And what else did he do?
Several things. Those are the two he's most known for, but like...
So he made this movie. I wish I knew the production story behind it. I don't really know the production story behind it. It came out earlier this spring in Japan. Didn't make much of an impact.
I know it was heavily like outsourced to European and like it was sort of a global production.
Okay.
And it was in the works for a long time. And that was it. That's all I knew.
Well, we saw it advertised when we were in Japan about a week after it came out. Mm-hmm. And I saw like a handful of advertisements for it and said, "What the heck is that?"
Right.
I've never heard of that. It kind of came and went. It didn't sell very well in Japan. It like the box office was low, and then it didn't sell very many Blu-rays. It's already out on Blu-ray over there.
Yeah.
And then G-Kids licensed it, and it's in theaters in New York and LA now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to expand beyond that, but we were given access to a press screener from G-Kids, thanks to G-Kids, and just watched it earlier today, and. Here's the weird thing about that movie. The title is, it's called Napping Princess, but there's actually two people, taking a nap while that movie is playing. It's both the title character and me.
Yeah, and you were taking
me. I was also taking a nap during this, movie that I didn't like very much.
Now, that is a joke. Zach was actually awake during it. He was just like, what?
Yeah, well, I was like, what is going on in this movie?
And I was like, I think I've got it, but I don't. It's not good.
Why is it impossible for me to pay attention to this?
Well, and so the weird thing, so the thing I learned from this movie mostly is that Kenji Kamiyama probably... It's not his strength. I don't think he should try to write for children or families.
Yeah, it's a I don't know why he made a family film.
It was like, this is like Shin Godzilla. Why did you try to make this for a family audience? Like,
it's kind of like Shin Godzilla.
It's his
like it feels like it's playing at that, but then it kind of muddles all of that.
It's very confusing.
It wants to be a fairy tale that also functions as kind of an allegory, kind of the way Shin Godzilla does, but it doesn't commit to that fully, and it's written in this, like, the screenplay is kind of a mess. Like, it's written in this sort of disjointed style where they withhold information from you that makes the setting and the characters and what's going on very confusing, and I think it's intended to be like a puzzle box kind of thing where you're like, what's going on? And then there's major plot reveals that are supposed to be presented as these, maybe not supposed to be, but feels like they should have been presented as a revelation because they're obscured from you in the beginning, intentionally obscured.
But it's just somebody calling the heroine on the phone going, here's all this information. Yeah. And it's like, oh, was that important?
All that's super important. That plot information that you're like, I don't understand what's going on. And then someone says something that's like, oh, it turns out that this guy is your grandfather and this guy is your mother. You're like, okay, I think I kind of understand this part of the story. Yeah, but like normally you would think like she would get to the... It that's revealed after an adventure or an
action
scene. And
it would be like a specific goal.
Yeah.
But I need to find this out
mm-hmm. instead of just like,
my dad got picked up by the police and now I guess I'm aimlessly running away from somebody I don't know.
Like if you read the Wikipedia plot summary for this movie, it's hard to understand. It's hard to follow.
Right. And the reason for that is not just because it's like, so it is trying to do the puzzle box thing, but at the same time, a lot of the answers for what's happening are not literal. They are magical realism. Like, straight up, you're like, oh, is this going to have an actual logical explanation, a la the science fiction stuff that Kamiyama's done forever? But it's like, no, this is the first Kamiyama thing that does kind of have magic in it, but it's not literal magic. It is a metaphor magic. It's magical realism, which means magical thing that's supposed to stand in for an emotional truth.
It's so confusingly executed.
And I like, so I got, because most of the movie, it's pretty well animated, but the aesthetic is really flat for some reason.
I thought it was really uninspired. It felt like a Your Name, Eden of the East mashup. Like, let's take these two aesthetics and blend them into one kind of uninteresting looking thing. Like,
yeah, I don't know if it was production limitations because the animation, you could tell the animator's talented, the animators are good, but it seems like they're disparate cuts that feel arranged kind of student filmy, kind of like, here's what we got, put it together. Like, it's just a little bit ramshackle and a little bit flat.
The direction is fine.
Yeah.
I just didn't care for the story. Mm-hmm. It didn't give me anything to hang on to with the characters, so, like, I didn't really care what happens to them. I was mostly just confused. Like, wait a second, is her dad the... Who's it and the why do they? Is this supposed to be a metaphor for the Olympics and Japan and technology?
And I don't understand what you're getting for here. Funny enough, because so much of the story is conveyed through people just talking on the phone or just texting, like, what is happening? Like, there's a lot that seems like there's a bunch of people standing around talking, which it's not. There's a lot of action in the movie. It's just separate completely from the information sharing. So there's like, here's a sequence where we're flying or, you know, here's the dream sequence. And then here's the sequence where we're standing around talking on the phone and explaining what any of this is supposed to mean, but too late for you to care.
Try to run down the story.
Okay. So the basics is that, what's her name? Kotone, I think is her name.
The main character.
Yeah, the main character, Kotone, something like that, is...
Kotone?
I think it's Kotone. But, like, basically she
if
lives
If only
out,
there were a magic box that could tell us.
She lives out in rural Japan with her dad because her mother passed away many years ago, and her dad has been kind of distant and hermity.
Kokone.
You put the lime in the coconut. Anyway, so she lives out in the rural Japan with her dad, and her dad has become, like, distant since her mother's death, and he, like, fixes old people's cars.
Wait a minute, wait.
What?
This is an anime And her mom is dead?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway.
At least she doesn't have a side pony.
No, she didn't have... She is the one, like, doomed mother who didn't have a side pony. She's actually very fashionable, like, cool-looking mom, but that's because...
Yeah, actually, the character designs weren't... I like Kamiyama's... I mean, I don't think those are his character designs, but I liked the character designs in the film, and they looked like other Kamiyama productions.
Right.
I should look up who does that.
He has a thing for that, I want to call it a thick upper lip.
Yeah, the real thick... I like that, though. Mm-hmm. I like the way it looks. I like the way they look in profile and stuff. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's good. It looks
like
good.
Even Makoto has that in... or Motoko. I always screw that up and switch the T and the K. But even Motoko has that in Ghost in the Shell.
I always... it's okay. Don't worry. I mess that up constantly.
It's like Motoko's the girl, Makoto is the boy. Okay. Anyway, so... where was I? So, she's living out in rural countryside. Her mother's dead, and her father is distant, and he, like... fixes up old people's cars by, like, when old people are sort of too old to drive, he installs this program in it that allows the car to self-drive. Mm-hmm. And he's apparently not really supposed to have this program because he gets arrested. He gets taken by the police early on in the first act, and the rest of the movie is a series of, like, her father's old business partners and police officers and some, like, friends that he met through a mechanics or an engineer's message board that used to work with him. And it's her, like, trying to rescue her dad and finding out about why he was arrested. But so all of this is happening in the real world, while in this fantasy world that she goes to when she falls asleep, it's like a more fantastical version of reality where they live in a car kingdom and she's the princess of the car kingdom and can use magic and stuff. But you think, okay, well, she's just dreaming a weird metaphor or version of what's happening in reality. But no, the stuff in her dreams, like, literally translates to what's actually happening. So the minute that she's doing something in the fantasy world and she wakes up back in the real world, it's impacted the real world in, like, basically the same way. And then as the movie goes on, the real world and the fantasy start to mingle. And it sort of makes sense. They do explain some of it in real world logic, but by the end it is full on magical realism. And it is confusing, to say the
least. Yeah, it's really confusing. And at first I kind of thought, because they kept talking about the Olympics coming up in 2020, and, like, the plot kind of hinges on there's one faction that wants to show off a completed and fully functional self-driving car technology during the opening ceremonies of the Olympics.
Uh-huh.
And there's, like, factions. Like, one of the guys wants to use the technology for helping out old people drive to the market in the rural parts of Japan.
Uh-huh.
And then the other guys want to use it for the opening ceremonies of the Olympics to convince the world that Japan is once again a technological marvel. And I thought it was going for, like, a Shin Godzilla, hey kids, reject the elders and build your own world kind of a thing. Like, reject reject the society that the old people have built for you and are attempting to trap you in.
Uh-huh.
Reject that cycle that they have created and, uh-huh. and build your own world, which was the message of Shin Godzilla.
Uh-huh.
I thought this was going for something like that, but it's so confused and, like, muddled that, like, by the end I was like, well, I don't know what the
also,
fuck
if all this stuff we're describing to you doesn't sound like a thing that children or families would like, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Like, it does play like a family movie at all.
You know, we don't have kids, it's so weird. We're not necessarily great judges of this.
True,
but I sat there thinking, like, man, if I was a kid, I'd just be really bored and confused.
Uh-huh.
I mean, as an adult, I was really bored and confused.
Uh-huh.
So I imagine a child, maybe.
Right, and maybe it was frustrating because, like, I did like... So you're right, that Shin Godzilla message is in there. The reason that it gets a little bit muddied is because of the attempt to make it more family-like. So there's also a message about, like, family and not abandoned. Like, napping is kind of tied as a symbol of depression. Like, this, like, the dad pulls away from her and, like, sleeps all the time instead of spending time with her. And, like, so they're trying to, like, do a thing with, like, don't abandon your family even when there's big ideological differences between you. But that kind of clashes with the other Shin Godzilla thing they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's just too many ideas. Like, so many ideas in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, happening?
Writing original stuff is really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And I'm not saying that to be condescending. It's really fucking hard to write an original story and have it work. And, like, I don't think that it's a bad movie. I don't think it came together.
Weirdly bad is not the word that I would use. I would be like...
I didn't like it.
It didn't work very well. It felt like it's not a bad thing. It's like a good thing with like just a bunch of pieces missing. And it's like you needed to put all this stuff back in here or take this stuff out.
Something like this
doesn't quite work yet.
Something like this comes out, and it's like, why aren't people talking about that?
Yeah.
And then you find out.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, people couldn't quite follow it, I don't think.
You would have heard if it was really good.
Yeah.
You would have heard. It's not.
Right.
It's in theaters. I highly recommend if you're if you are an anime fan who likes... I think it's just because I'm like this. It doesn't really matter what the reviews say. I will watch it anyway. If it's like an anime movie like this, like... we made a film, I'll watch it. It's only an hour and a half of my life, you know. I always feel like, you know, I should be knowledgeable about this stuff, and I have a genuine personal curiosity. I want to see it for myself no matter what.
And Kamiyama, like everything he does, say what you will about whether Eden of the East or Ghost in the Shell or this movie.
I liked Eden of the East a lot.
Well, you can say what you will about how well they did or didn't succeed with various things, but, like, Kamiyama is always interested in talking about the time in which he lives in this very specific way, and you don't see that, like, a lot of anime and a lot of Japanese media, even that's not animated, is escapist, and it's sort of, like, fluffy, and, you know, like, that's true, that's not exactly unique to Japanese
media. Yeah, I was about to tell you, like...
That's not unique to Japanese
media. I got some news for you.
but we live in America. We can tell the difference between the American escapism and like, the real issues that might be pertinent to people with... We don't live in Japan. So when there is a creator who's interested in talking about, like, just sort of the details of the life that they live now, what modern life is and what people are thinking about and talking about, which is what Kamiyama wants to do, then that's cool. So even if it's like, oh, this is a hot mess and it doesn't really work, it's like, well, at least he wanted to talk about, like, how Japan is reacting to the 2020 Olympics, i.e., as far as I can tell, like, hyping it up way more than necessary and attaching way too much, like, expectations for as to what it's going
to
do.
There did seem to be a little bit of that in there, but I'm not confident enough in my knowledge of current Japanese political attitudes towards the Olympics to really make that call.
Right.
Like, in our dealings with, you know, going there and knowing people who live there and knowing people who follow Japanese politics and reading really smart people on Twitter and stuff, like, that do know this stuff, I am getting the perception that there is a disconnect between the government sort of pushing the Olympics really hard and the people saying, like, I don't know if this is such a great idea, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, but if the movie's really been in production for that long, then, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows? But,
I recommend if you're curious, if you're like me and you're just like, look, I'm just curious about anime movies. Like, I just want to see it. I don't recommend skipping it. You should see it for yourself and make up your own mind. Because, you know, there's not that many anime films.
Well, we ran an interview on Napping Princess. They said the 2020 Olympics thing was one of the last things to be added to the script.
Okay.
In it. So that, you know, even if it was in production for a while, apparently that was a late addition. So in terms of trying to bring it together, so, you know.
You know, the by all accounts, that Erica Seven movie has similar plot problems, like script confusing scripting problems and stuff like that. I'm curious to see that one, too. But it would be disappointing if there were two movies right out of the gate that just kind of like, eh. I am not caught up on summer anime. I'm behind on Made in Abyss. I am not caught up at all.
I mean, like, I just... To me, this was the most buh season...
It's pretty buh.
...ever. So, like, not ever... In recent memory that I can remember in terms of things to discuss. So, like, I don't even want to talk about summer anime. I guess the two...
You're just really excited about fall.
Yeah, the two things I can think of to talk about are from spring. It's like, oh, Recreators did end and Rage of Bahamut did end, because both of those were original things.
Yeah.
You know, and in both cases... Well, no, I mean, like, so Rage of Bahamut is just completely face-planted. Like, it was just...
Did it? That's a shame. I figured because I hadn't seen anyone talking about it. They loved the beginning, but then stopped caring.
Yeah, it just went full, so this was a problem that the first season had. One of the things that held me back from really loving the first Rage of Bahamut was it went too dark, which is weird. It's usually, like, when anime goes dark or whatever, it kind of fits, and when it goes too light, maybe that's the problem, when it smooths over things with too much, like, treacle or fantasy. But Bahamut was such a, like, this is Pirates of the Caribbean, this is Indiana Jones, don't go too dark with this. And so at the last second, when it kind of went, like, tragic, when it kind of went Shakespearean, and it got all sad on you, it felt wrong. And so I was like, well, surely they're not going to do that twice. And they just fully did it twice, except much worse. And so it's just really dour. And I'm like, why is this so dour? Guys, like, this is not the strength of your material or your tone. But so, but Recreators ended really, really well, which is good because it was a rocky road getting there. So Recreators, I think, is like, it's a show that I really wanted to love because it like the Kamiyama thing, like, it's talking about people's just real grounded feelings and like actual circumstances of being a light novel writer or whatever in Japan. You know, it feels real. It doesn't feel escapist or workshopped or whatever. It just feels like these people talking about their experience with things. So I wanted to like it a lot more than I did. But I appreciate what it was trying to express. My problems with it are entirely circumstantial. They're not with like anything insulting about it or like bad character writing or anything. They're just like, all right, this is Bleach-level battle writing with, what do they do now? This person pulls out another power, and then, okay, 15 minutes of fighting has passed, what do they do now? This person has this other power over here, and it's like, come on, guys, like, you focus on the characters. This is, so structurally, it's a mess. Everything else about it, great, brilliant. Structurally, structure's not Haraway's strong suit, I don't think. Hmm. Black Lagoon is not a structured show, it's completely episodic, so, you know.
Well,
anyway, but
that's a shame.
I mean, I would check it out. The way it ends is really, really moving and powerful and kind of fucked up, but in a good way. Like, so yeah, I would say watch Recreators, definitely give it a shot. It's really unique. I just, you know, be prepared to be a little bored or a little like, I was expecting more at points. But it
drags in the middle.
Yeah, the thing that really matters most, the thing they needed to stick the landing on, which is the central character relationship, they get. So the rest of it,
cool.
You know.
And, all right, I'll probably sit through it at some point.
Yeah.
Probably. Let's see. So that's kind of anime. Mm-hmm. We meant to talk about some movies. We've been to the movies a few times.
Yeah.
Before we get to Twitter questions here, we got a bunch of mailbag to get through.
Cool.
But let's talk about movies for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we saw Stephen King's It, mm-hmm. which at this point everybody has talked about how good that movie is. It was really good. I actually really liked it. I was not expecting it to be good. Well, I wasn't expecting to even go see it. Like,
yeah, I was the one who pushed you to go see it.
I'm not, for like, evil clown imagery to begin with. It's just kind of like, all right, I don't like Stephen King books all that much. Like, he's made some... Like, there are good Stephen King movies, but it's like...
Carrie, The Shining,
Shawshank Redemption, Misery, and The Mist. And that's kind of... You know, some people count The Green Mile, but The Green Mile is just kind of like, what if The Shawshank Redemption wasn't as good? and it's not as good a film. But I really did, and it, like, the TV miniseries, which I saw again recently, is awful.
I love that picture of Tim Curry in full clown makeup standing in the rain under a blue umbrella smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
That's art.
Right. But that miniseries is bad. It's kind of like the Stephen King greatest hits. Like, it talks about the same stuff, all of his other stuff. He just kind of remixes the same, like, five or six themes over and over again in a lot of his stuff. But the movie, this movie, was it was an adaptation, but it changed a lot enough, I think. And it was Cary Fukunaga who did the first season of True Detective, which mm-hmm. a lot of people really liked, me included. Mm-hmm. And you could kind of tell that he was in there, and it looked good. The special effects were really good. All the little kids were really good. They
got,
like,
the
really
biggest,
good
kid
actors.
That's the most impressive thing, I think, about it is... I mean, a lot of impressive things about it. But the most impressive thing is, like, 100% good child actors.
Yeah.
Like...
In a movie
that's 1,000% child acting, like almost no adults doing things in it.
Yeah, totally. Know? Although I'm glad that, because I did see the movie that Colin Trevorrow made that everyone went on and on and on about how terrible it was, that got him shit canned from Star Wars Episode 9.
That's a left turn.
The Book of Henry. The reason I bring it up is because the main kid in The Book of Henry is the main kid in Stephen King's It. It's mm-hmm. the same actor. Yeah. And I'm glad I saw it first because I would not... He is the most... That movie is... You have not seen The Book of Henry, you listening to this podcast, you have not seen it.
Right.
You should... Sit down with your friends that you'd like to laugh at bad movies with mm-hmm. and watch The Book of Henry. You will hoot and holler mm-hmm. all the way through it.
Mm-hmm. It is bad.
Holy shit.
Yes.
You should also be happy that they shit-canned Colin Trevorrow from Star Wars Episode 9, because if that is where his creative sensibilities lie, oh my god. Anyway, same kid, I'm just saying.
Right.
If I had seen it after the fact, with that fucking kid in it, I would have been like, ah! Yeah. Henry,
it's
get out of here. Yeah.
And the weirdest thing to me about it, and this is just a personal thing. I'm not saying like I think this is true for most people. Like I just have a different, I guess, fear response to specific kinds of things. But I actually didn't find it the film as a whole scary, like ever at all.
I always find this to be a really weird. Like I'm not getting on you. I'm not getting on you.
But this is not an insult, because you think, okay, like so if you don't find a comedy funny, it's bad. You don't find a horror movie scary, it's bad. But like weirdly, it didn't matter, because it wasn't about finding it scary. It was just about finding it like engrossing, I guess, like sort of a weird like psychological horror bizarro, you know, like, and drama. Like I cared about the characters as the characters, and so it didn't matter that I wasn't actually frightened of the imagery. The biggest problem was every time something scary happened, the music goes rah! Like it goes really, really hard, and to me, like that kill, like there's something more frightening about like unexpected disjunct between the imagery and the sound or whatever. But when the music goes bah right before something scary happens, you're warned, and so it doesn't really work for me. But like it didn't matter, because it was really, really engrossing and bizarre, and like the pacing was really solid and the way it was cut was really solid, and you cared about the characters. So it's like I'm not frightened, I'm not like tense during this, but I don't really care. It's just a good story, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was good. I wasn't expecting to care about it at all, but everyone said it was great. And it was.
Yep.
Do you know what movie everyone said was not great?
Mother.
Darren Aronofsky's Mother, with an exclamation point at the end.
I love the, there's an anecdote going around. Darren Aronofsky did an interview, and there's an excerpt where he talks about where he came up with the title.
Yeah,
Before I wrote the script, I just sat down and I just typed the word mother, and then I was like, this needs something, and I put an exclamation point. And then he kept it, and he wrote the rest of the script in 5 days or less, and then he kept that title, and you get to watch his art movie.
So, Darren Aronofsky made a movie that is a feature-length allegory for his super edgelord art school feelings about how worthless humanity is. Mm-hmm. It's weird to me that people are...
And how they have hurt the earth who he is marrying.
Yeah. And now it's coming out after the fact that he's marrying Jennifer Lawrence, which is like...
I didn't want to believe it. As I was watching that movie, I was like, I think he's fucking Jennifer Lawrence. No. It's just how movies are shot. It's not... Surely he's...
Do you remember in...
He was.
Do you remember in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom where Steven Spielberg shoots the title card with Kate Capshaw's body in front of the title of the movie, obscuring the title of the film?
Yes.
And it's not CinemaScope, but like it's filling the screen with the title, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, and in front of the title is Kate Capshaw.
Yes.
This whole movie is shot like that.
Right. I mean, like, it's not, I wish that it was shot like her doing Anything Goes in Chinese or whatever.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, check out this. Check out my lady. Like, that's pretty much what it is. So it's a really sloppy movie that's it's a lot of people saying it's like unwatchable, which it pretty much is. Like, I leaned over to you and was like, this is awful.
I started laughing with the baby stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I started outwardly, because what else can you do at that point when they're literally what's it called? It's a fancy ass term for communion that I'm looking for, because it's more than just communion. It's everything that communion symbolizes. But when they're making that as literal as possible with the consumption of a faux Christ child baby, I was laughing, because what can you do other than laugh when that like level of freshman grim dark eating a baby metaphor is like right in front of you actually having been made?
I mean, one of the reasons I bring it up is because if you're into anime and you like, you know, sort, and you have like a soft spot for auteur theory, and you like kind of crazy bad art made by auteurs with a vision. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed Mother. I enjoyed the act of watching it. Like, I, after the fact, I was like, you know, All right. Like,
I wasn't bored, but I was actively, you know, so I was looking for, like, because I feel like bad because there's a lot of movies right now that we go see that I'm like, I was bored. And so it's always a good thing when I come out of a movie and I'm like, I wasn't bored. But at the same time, like, there's, so the other movie I had this response to was The Hateful Eight. And at no point during Mother or The Hateful Eight was I bored. But I'm frustrated. I can't say that that's a positive because I was repulsed the entire time. I was like, fuck this, like the entire time. So I was like, is that better? I don't know if it's maybe slightly better than being bored, but it's, you know, really not good. And I was really, really sick when I was watching The Hateful Eight, like, too. So that made it worse, you know?
I liked Mother more than The Hateful Eight. The Hateful Eight was shorter. Just, like, interminable.
It's shorter, so there's
it
that
is shorter.
Too.
The Hateful Eight is, like, 12 hours long.
Yes.
But if you like, crazy bullshit made by auteurs huffing their own farts, which I do. Mm-hmm. I like that kind of thing. A famous example of that is the movie The End of Evangelion, for example.
End of Evangelion is way better than Mother.
I'm not comparing them on a quality level, mm-hmm. but End of Evangelion is absolutely crazy auteur shit. Mm-hmm. So is this. It's just not good. Mm-hmm. But if you're curious about that kind of thing, mm-hmm. yeah, I would say get fucked up and watch Mother with your friends. Like, yeah, you might have if you're into that kind of, like, if you like the art school kind of attitude, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, if you have a soft spot for it like I do, yeah, you know, also, you don't get a lot of movies like this anymore. Like, the thing I would compare it to closest is Lars von Trier's Antichrist, which,
right.
if you watch
it's also
art
unwatchable.
Movies, yeah, it's also unwatchable, but that's the one with the fox that says chaos reigns in it, which right. is good. That gave us one good thing. Mm-hmm. If you saw that...
Poor Willem Dafoe's balls.
Yeah, or you've been curious about it, like, this is that kind of a thing, and if you're that kind of a person who likes that kind of a thing, I'm just saying, check it out.
All right, if you have to be that level of devoted to that to that particular interest, because I would say if you're anything but that, just don't even bother.
Just don't go see it. Oh, this I wouldn't recommend it to anybody else. Do not watch the film Mother yeah. by Darren Aronofsky, unless... Mm-hmm. Unless.
But, like, if you have any respect for decently written allegory that doesn't seem like it was done by, like, a freshman college student who just heard about global warming for the first time, and, like, there's a girl in his class he really wants to impress, I don't... don't watch it, because that's what it is. It's like, ugh.
What if, like, God was just, like, a man?
He's Javier Bardem.
And his wife is... His wife is, like, the earth.
And it's, like, also...
And they're married, right? And they're like, they're married, and like,
there's this girl, and then seeing, one I day she would be the Earth,
and then one day God just like
really
invites
hot, so
humans in. He just like humans just start showing up, and they just start fucking everything up.
They start like painting the walls,
and you're like,
house.
Well, hang on, I don't think you can anthropomorphize like the Earth. And he's like, no, and then like even more people, and God is like vain, and he's like, oh no, I need them around me, I need them to love me, and she's like, no, they're killing me, and he's like, no, I'm done. Like that's what it.
And we should draw from the Bible. So literally, the person who shows up at his house is a guy with one rib missing, with a bruised rib, and then he has two sons, one of which kills the other and ends up with a scar on his face. Ah, it's so literal. The movie is so basic.
There's a flood.
It's so basic.
There's a flood.
I forgot about Noah's Flood. Noah's Flood is literally her sink explodes because somebody sits on it.
Yeah.
During a house party.
Stop sitting on
it. And everybody leaves.
I think it's fine.
And everybody leaves, see? Because it's like the old sins of humanity were washed away by the kitchen sink exploding because Jennifer Lawrence hadn't screwed it down yet.
I kind of liked it.
It's stupid.
I'm going to buy it on Blu-ray. Anyway.
Everyone in here is dumber for having heard of it.
Let's, why don't we take some Twitter questions now that we're done talking about Darren Aronofsky's Mother.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. From Stefan, has it become any harder to watch anime for review purposes now that you have so many pets around? I mean... No, the kitten is really... We adopted a kitten, and she's really annoying.
Yeah, Philly, our kitten, did steal my chimichanga today.
Yeah, she straight up ate, like... Well, I don't know how much of it she actually ate,
but...
It was
fully a fourth or a third of the chimichanga. She's not that big. She is an 8-pound kitten, and she just horked down that much of that burrito.
Yeah, we received a grim reminder that day. Do not leave your food out.
Why did you do this? Yeah, but no, usually they get in the way when I'm really focused on work rather than what, because I'm watching something passively, then I can, like, pet the kitten, take care of the cat. But if I'm, like, trying to write or edit something, then, yeah, sometimes the kitties are a problem.
Yeah.
Bunny behaves herself. Isn't that right, Olive? Yep.
Yep, Bunny just behaves herself. She's doing good. Okay. Nos Anime wants to know, is there a single thing, no matter how small, that Jacob likes about Monogatari? We just keep getting asked about this.
I feel like this is easy to question and answer. I like a lot of things about Monogatari. I don't hate Monogatari because I dislike everything about it. I hate it because of several core things about it that really, 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 really bother me. But, like, no, the way it's shot, it is the best use. I think it's the most, like, relevant use of Shaft's visual aesthetic. It's actually not directed by Akishimbo. It's directed by somebody else. The visual aesthetic is really, it really contributes. Is also magical realism done well. We brought up magical realism earlier in the podcast. It is a fully well-recognized way to do magical realism that totally makes sense and you understand it and it works. The music is good. I have lots of nice things to say about Monogatari, but I think the premise is great if Araragi did not exist. Araragi ruins that premise, I think, my personal opinion, but, like, there's a lot of good things about Monogatari. It's just that the bad things are so bad and bother me so much.
And they're fundamental to what the show is.
Right, they're fundamental to what the show is about, on, like, on a deeper level, what it's trying to tell you, you know.
Branko Berkson asks, have you seen Recreators? Well, we just talked about that. Are you planning an Ancast episode about it? That I don't know. I feel like you've talked it to death at this point.
I think it's the only time I've really brought it up, maybe, is once or twice. But, like,
I'm not sure you also have this column called This Week in Anime, right, where you just did an entire week's worth of content on Recreators.
Yeah,
so
it's really
a little
fresh right now.
If people are still interested in that in a couple of months, mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Right. Yeah, it's definitely it, because I want to see it, so... That's usually the chief motivating factor behind whether or not there's a series
right,
discussion.
Will Zach sit through it?
Do I want to watch it? Have I seen it yet? Mm-hmm. Those are two things. Chris Adamson wants to know, do you guys have a favorite anime movie that you saw in the theater? In the theater. That's a good question.
I mean, most recently, Your Name. It's a really boring answer. I'm sorry, but Your Name.
Yeah, dude. Man, that was good.
I went into that thinking, like, I think this is going to be good. And then it was like, holy shit.
And it was
shit.
Like, what? Man, I'm looking forward to seeing really that good. Movie again.
Goddamn.
I want to see that movie again.
Yeah.
Just got to wait for the Blu-ray. Your Name is a good recent example. I saw Redline in the theater, in a really good theater, where they really knew what they were doing, and they had the sound turned way up, and it was really fucking great.
That's
and
great.
I wish they would put Redline back in theaters, like a one-night Fathom Events thing or whatever. Just show it again, man. Mm-hmm. Bring that movie back around. I feel like people would... give it a different chance now. Okay. R. Phillips wants to know, even with the news of Harmony Gold's license for Macross expiring in 4 years, has the lack of any recent English language release killed any real chance of developing a new franchise given the age of new fan base given the age of the franchise? Okay, so in other words, Harmony Gold's license for Macross is expiring, as we have found out, in about 4 years.
Right.
What does that mean? Does that mean, is it too late to build a Macross fandom? No, first of all, no. There is a Macross fandom in the U.S.
It exists,
and they're very passionate and vocal.
They're very
I don't know how many of them there are. When I went into, so I went into interview the two ladies from Warukude, the two singers, and their management spent about half my interview time asking me about how American fans know about Macross now. And the minute I said, I started with, I think the first or second sentence out of my mouth was legal issues. And every executive, their manager, their handlers, all, I heard this like nod of they knew what I was talking about. And so I was like, and they asked me, like, so how do American
Yar,
fans...
Yar, har, fiddle-dee-dee.
So I said, like, well, plenty of them do actually import the Blu-rays that came with English subtitles on them, but most people that you will talk to about Macross on the internet, if they speak English, they're pirating it. And they were like, oh, yeah, I'm grassing about that. But I don't know. It's... I think you stand, like, you can watch subtitled Macross on Amazon. Like, they have the show subtitled.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
They do. It's not widely publicized. I wanted to do an Ancast series about it. I don't think they have Do You Remember Love, which, yeah. I don't really know how it's going to go. I'm happy that that's expiring. 4 years from now, maybe we'll actually start getting Macross on, like, DVD and Blu-ray and stuff. And, like, I'll finally get my Macross 7, at least on DVD, I would get the show. Something like that.
Yeah, I was explaining,
like, selfishly, I just want them to release all of that stuff on DVD and Blu-ray, and make it available streaming and everything. I want all of that stuff.
Yeah, I was explaining all of this to Mari Ijima when I was interviewing her, and she said, yeah, well, back then contracts were, she said, and even now in Japan, like, there's a little bit more of a, like, oh, trust sort of thing, like, when it comes to paperwork, she said, but it's way more, like, direct now than it used to be. Back then it was like, ah, oh, we trust you, just write whatever you want, not, you know, and, like, contracts were so loosey-goosey. She said, I'm sure they're kicking themselves about it now, but, like, you know, Kawamori and crew didn't really, they weren't really, like, strict about that sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
So, well, which has allowed Harmony Gold to take advantage of a lot of loopholes.
I don't really know how things are going to go with that. I'm really, really happy that it's finally going to loosen up again. But the thing is that if Harmony Gold, like, turns around and pays enough money, Tatsunoko Pro might just hand the rights back to him. I seriously fucking doubt that. But, like, that's the way it could conceivably go. Those rights would be up for anybody, whoever's got enough money and will to put it together. So we should be happy that it's coming back around again, but nobody knows what's going to happen. So right. We will see. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping against hope that what it means is a Blu-rays of the entire Macross series released here in some fashion at some point. I want a whole thing, all of it. All right. Fuzzy Proxy asks, are there any upcoming anime films, whether they're this year or 2018 or 19, that you're curious about? Well, all of them. Yeah. All of them. I really want to see Mary and the Witch's Flower. That looks interesting. So they just made a Ghibli movie.
Yeah, they're just like...
You know what would probably do really well? Studio Ghibli Harry Potter. So they made that.
Yep.
And the trailers look really pretty. Mm-hmm. I just want to gawk at it. Mm-hmm. But it looks cool. What's the other thing I'm really excited about? Foolie Cooley. Oh, it's not a movie, but I'm really fucking excited
just,
about it. It's
just
gonna
drop
be so
it
into good.
Every conversation.
There's a little movie called Evangelion 4.0 that'll potentially be out sometime in the next couple of years. Yeah.
2020.
Fuck, I can't wait for that.
I say give Anno all the time in the world to think about how he wanted to end.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, if I'm old and gray or dead in the ground, I hope it comes out before I'm dead, but...
I
hope it comes out before I'm dead. That's my only stipulation. I cross my fingers that it comes out before I am dead.
I mean, if you go before Anno, like, that would be pretty weird anyway. Like.
Yeah, well, anyway. So that stuff, I'm curious, I mean, you know, Miyazaki's got one coming. Who knows what that's going to be like. It's hard. Off the top of my head, I can't, like, just
I mean, of stuff
start
that came
rattling
in, out. Of stuff that came out in Japan recently, I guess, like, that Mary and the Witch's Flower thing and the Shaft made a movie that is actually doing pretty well in Japan.
Which,
like,
one is that?
Fireworks. Yeah. Well, I think the reason it's doing really well, and so this is a trend that Your Name absolutely started. Continued. It was already a trend, but Your Name cemented it as, like, oh, this is a thing we're going to do even harder than we did before. Because that movie is mostly being sold on the single by, like, a very well-known rapper in Japan who does a ballad for it. She does, like a hip-hop sort of ballad. Like, it's a very sweet and tender ballad, but she's not really, like, it's like a pseudo-rap. It's, like, sort of singing in a rhythm sort of a thing. It's really good. It's on Spotify. You should look it up. The singer's name is Daoko. I don't remember the name of the song, but you can look it up. It's, like, the theme to Fireworks. And that single is doing really well in Japan, so people are going to see the movie just because of the song, apparently. And so that's a thing, that's a sort of a Your Name thing, where they're like, okay, we can sell stuff on soundtrack. You can still do that in Japan. I remember when you could sell stuff on soundtrack in America. Actually, it was kind of before my time, too. But, like, I mean, in terms of looking at movie history, I remember when stuff was sold on soundtrack, which is a weird thing to even consider now because it's not really done that way anymore. But, like, it's a fun idea if you like, you know, pop music and you like seeing how they try to mix those things. But anyway, my point is I'm curious about that movie just because I wonder if it's any good or if it was just the song that got people to go see it.
Yeah. I don't know if we're just going to like start getting more films or whatever. Let's see. Discotheque is putting out that movie Hells, which I've always wanted to see and have never seen. And they're finally putting it out. Other than that, can't really think of too much. Those are kind of the major ones. Let's see. Hiroyuki wants to know, thoughts on Sentai Filmworks phasing out DVDs. Will we see this with other companies in the near future? Also, thoughts on the new Legend of the Galactic Heroes anime. We got a few questions about Logue. So Sentai Filmworks is phasing out DVD. They are by 2019, I guess, they're going to be no longer producing DVDs at all.
They'll produce DVDs for DVD only series.
But
not for anything that that's decent enough to get a Blu-ray or whatever.
I think it's something that sounds like it's a big deal, but isn't. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the way the market goes. Most people who buy anime buy it on Blu-ray. Most people who buy anime are collectors that are buying it for their collection, and they want the nicest possible presentation. I don't see it as this major thing. They made a big deal out of it, but I don't really see it as a big deal, I guess.
Yeah, anime is a collector's market. It's, you know... I feel like we ran an answer man on this that covered it all really well, so I feel like I don't have a lot to add to, like, Justin, like, you know, kind of...
He ran it down pretty good.
He ran it down pretty good.
But, yeah, but, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really... Like, end of an era, I guess, for them. Other publishers, I think, will probably follow suit as business dictates. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that Kleckner over at Right Stuff, he's not doing he's not doing DVDs on Gundam anymore. It's just Blu-ray from here.
Well, and Sentai, for the most part, from what I'm aware, they're not one of the companies that sends out a lot of stuff to big box marts, are they?
Sentai?
Yeah, big box.
Fry's Electronics and Best Buy stock.
I guess I meant more.
You mean
Walmart.
Like Walmart?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Walmart and Target.
I think they have
like
a few.
That.
They get a few titles maybe in there, but I don't know. I don't know exactly. I shouldn't say because I don't know exactly.
Right. I guess I associate that more with like
DVDs mass market being printed. Mass market. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Another Macross question from Land of Obscusion. Once Harmony Gold's Macross license expires, how long do you think it'll take for the franchise to return legally? Minutes. No, I hope minutes, but who knows? It depends. Hasn't been relicensed? Evangelion TV. So who fucking knows? Who knows how much money they want for it? You know, how about Most Beat and Southern Cross? I don't know. Who knows? You know, and he asks about like Macross Plus and 2 out on Blu-ray. Like, I hope that they do that. I hope all of that stuff comes.
What
back
do you
out.
Think? So just in a hypothetical situation where Macross rights are up for grabs and like somebody goes for stuff, what do you think is going to be the biggest grab? Like, what are they going to go to first? Like,
well, you know what? That's an interesting question.
Right.
If you're like, oh yeah, boy, they'll have to pay for what though?
Right.
For original Macross? For Macross Plus?
Plus.
That is those Frontier. Rights are still like manga and Starz Video still own the rights to Macross Plus. Mm-hmm. So if anyone puts it out, they'll put it out.
What I'm thinking, like, what the original or Frontier are the ones that people still talk about? I think because of the girl.
Frontier
with
had a big
the
impact.
Green pigtail girl,
Cheryl Gnome. Yeah.
Well, Cheryl Gnome's the one with the pink
hair.
No,
this is the other one.
Yeah.
Rock.
I don't remember her name.
I only remember there was a weird Twitter guy who was like obsessed with her.
Well,
so
she
I remember
was a big
that.
Deal. She was
Ronka
like,
Lee, right?
Ronka Lee, that's it.
Yeah.
She was a big deal for Japanese fans and also she was a big waifu sort of.
Dude, everybody I interviewed at the pop, the J-pop super kawaii fucking anime, Anisong music festival at AX, half of them cited her as their inspiration for one. I want to be an idol because of Macross Frontier.
Cheryl or Ranka?
For Cheryl. And I don't know exactly, but it was one of those two. And they would bring up Frontier as their inspiration.
Well, so that's what I'm saying is like, do you think that might be the first go-to? Because it's not as old as like a lot.
Maybe.
Of stuff,
you know? In my heart, it's Do You Remember Love? Like, put that shit out.
Definitely. But I'm just saying like...
I don't know. I don't think they're... Like, you're right. It's like the one that I feel like has the most mainstream appeal and the one that maybe the most people have seen is Macross Plus, but that's just because it was a hit on video and it showed on like the Sci-Fi Network and everything for a long time. So in terms of the crown jewel, it depends on who you ask, but I would imagine Frontier is the one that might come out first. I don't know. It's hard
to
speculate.
Purely hypothetical.
Yeah, it's just hypothetical for speculation. Let's see. Yagshi wants to know, what are some recent movies you've enjoyed? Well, we talked about that. And what are some that you're looking forward to? In terms of this the rest of this year, let's see. Let's look at a release calendar. I'm usually bad at just remembering this shit off the top of my head.
Star Wars.
Yep, Star Wars. I am excited about Star Wars.
I'm genuinely excited. I want to see more of my boy Kylo Ren.
Yeah,
and that's kind of my big dream.
I know you're excited for Friend Request.
For Christ's sake!
The video. I saw a trailer. I saw like a clip of a trailer, and it showed like a kitten video where the kitten becomes evil at the end of the video, and you're like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Anyway, let's see here. Blade Runner 2049, I think, is gonna be good. That's my official prediction. Put a lock on it if I had like some sort of prediction gimmick. I bet Blade Runner 2049 is gonna be good. I bet you I eat those words.
And to bring it back around to anime, there's a prequel.
There is an anime prequel
in less than a week.
Yeah, so that'll be on Crunchyroll.
I watch Nabe.
Yeah. Let's see. Thor, I am excited about. Excited is a strong word. I will see
Intrigued
Thor.
By.
I think it's going to be fun.
When is Black Panther?
That is next year.
Oh.
I am not interested in a lot of this shit that's coming out. The one that I'm looking forward to the most is Phantom Thread, which is the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie that comes out supposedly this year, and is also
Guillermo del Toro's fish fucking
movie. Yeah, The Shape of Water looks
fish fucking movie. Sorry,
that comes out December 8th. You probably shouldn't be that reductive about it. It's supposed to be a beautiful film.
No, I'm not being reductive. I'm just using a funny,
if you meme funny that name. If you meme it into the fish fucking movie, that is what it will become, and that's whatever, how everyone
sorry,
will return
it's
all
it into. That I know about it apart from the trailer, but it looks good.
It's like Creature from the Black Lagoon, so but it's that, sympathetic to their romance.
Thing that looks bad, but I must see it. Kenneth Branagh playing Hercule Poirot.
You think that looks bad?
I mean, I don't understand why you would make that, but I just want to see Kenneth Branagh doing a silly, like, faux Belgian accent, and I just want to see it. That's all. I don't think it looks bad. I'm just like, I don't understand why this was made, but I will see Kenneth Branagh play Hercule Poirot way too seriously.
There's a live-action Blade of the Immortal coming out that I'm sort of curious about. I saw a bus station poster for it the other day, and I was like, whoa, you spent money marketing this? Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's weird. Let's see. The Ultimate Jeff wants to know, question for Jacob, favorite character, least favorite character, and favorite trial in Danganronpa V3? If possible, answer without spoilers.
I think we should save that for the Danganronpa cast. But I have to think about it, too, because...
You know. All right, we'll put a pin in that. Wait till the Danganronpa spoiler casts. Yeah. It's coming. CC Takato wants to know your thoughts on the Mach Go 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 bizarre head box set and $300 price tag. So this is a figural sculpture of Speed Racer's head, and you pull it open that. So here's the thing, though.
Take the adventures out of my head.
There is a long and storied history of shitty, DVD collector's editions where it's a giant modeled head that has a bunch of movies in it. So, like, there's a Planet of the Apes one and a Terminator one and, several of them. I think there was, like, a couple Planet of the Apes ones. There's
a
Spider-Man one. Oh. There was a giant Jamie Foxx head that you take the Amazing Spider-Man 2 out of.
Electro's character?
Yeah.
That's awful.
Have you ever
Who
seen that?
This?
Yeah, I don't know. They were clearing them out of Amazon a while ago. But that is a time-honored tradition, is the giant head box. Mm-hmm. I have zero interest in it, because what do you do with that thing? Yeah. It takes up an enormous amount of space. It's this giant conversation piece, whether you want it to be one or not.
But he's a demon on wheels.
I mean, look, Speed Racer's fine, but I don't need a giant model of his head.
Smiling at you.
In which, like, you, yeah.
Put that over your bed.
There's, like, an earthquake, and it drops to the ground, and all the adventures just spill out all over. His head just cracks open, and all the discs spill all over the floor. Drop to your knees. Speed. Let's see. Modern Rocker wants to know, is pineapple on pizza acceptable?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Nope.
It's a fine flavor combination.
Fucking gross.
For when you feel that sweet.
Doesn't belong
savory.
On pizza at all.
That sweet, sour, and savory combination.
Why did we get married?
It is. It's not for. It's not an every meal, but it is a sometimes food.
Yes. Blah, pineapple on pizza, sweet and cheese. No.
Yeah.
No.
Sweet and cheese.
Sweet and savory do not really.
A lot of people would disagree with you on that.
Blah. Ruins the pizza taste. You want the pizza taste. I don't want pineapple. Pineapple overpowers the entire thing.
You know what's gross?
All I taste
you
is pineapple.
You know what's gross? Onions on pizza.
That's no, that's gross. Fucking weird that's that you nasty. Would say. That's weird that you would say that.
It's
because
weird.
Onions are like a time-honored thing, a phrase
drown,
that I'm saying.
Whatever else is the flavor on the pizza, they drown it out. Because it's just you get smell and texture of onions in your mouth over whatever the cheese
is. But you're cool with pineapple.
Yeah.
Anyway. Which does the same thing.
No, pineapple is actually pretty mellow.
Nope.
It's pretty
mellow. I may as well just be eating a pineapple.
No, it's
just
okay.
Hand me a pineapple instead.
Pineapple's
I ordered
my
pizza, not a pineapple.
Pineapple is not even my favorite fruit. Like, I wouldn't, like, eat it by itself very often, but it's fine as a seasoning.
Not on pizza.
You're crazy.
Let's do another 2 hours on this. Okay. QB the Third wants to know, what have been your favorite movies of this year so far, both anime and live action? Okay. Again,
something cause...
off the top of my head, Darren Aronofsky's Mother. No, I'm just kidding.
Thinking back, something that immediately jumped to my mind was Dunkirk and the Third Apes movie, so I liked both of those.
The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature.
I'm sure there's other I'm forgetting. But
Dunkirk would not be on my short
it.
List.
Boy,
what did I like this year?
It's been a hard year for the past couple years in terms
it's
of like
not
homogeny.
The
of
mummy.
The
What? Jeez, I'm just scrolling here and I'm like, wait, what was good?
Right? It was a bit of a blah year. But look, I liked Dunkirk. I liked Apes 3.
I liked Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That was pretty good.
I liked that one. I didn't like the first one. I liked the second one.
Your Name technically came out this year in the U.S. Jeez, I saw all of this fucking crap, and I didn't like any. Kong Skull Island was good.
I wasn't crazy about Kong Skull Island.
It was good. I liked it. It was entertaining.
It was all right.
I still haven't seen John Wick Part 2. I should see that. Boy, you know,
what
best,
a year.
But yeah,
what a
I couldn't
year.
I couldn't tell you. Mother is the most unique thing I've seen all year. That maybe that is
I
why
I disagree with that.
Yeah, maybe that's why I had a strong reaction to it because otherwise
so
otherwise weird. It was Alien Covenant and Transformers
well,
the last
I hated
night.
Alien Covenant.
I liked Alien Covenant.
Hated it.
I thought it was
I will say I think of our years having been together like this is the most disparate we've been on movies we like to discuss. I feel like in as far as like coming away from movie and I liked it and you're like I didn't like I feel like that's happened more this year than it has in past years.
I didn't like
ever
Baby Driver either.
Yeah, and I was like fine with it. It wasn't the best of his work, but I thought it was pretty
or
good.
Valerian.
Well, Valerian was garbage. Yeah,
jeez,
this is a rough year.
This is yeah,
it's a sad year.
Death Note was a memorable film.
It was terrible.
Also from QBA, y'all have a hot take on Made in Abyss. Do you have a hot take on it?
I think this has just been espoused by a lot of people, so I'm not sure it's a hot take, but the weird fetish, the weird, very rare and occasional, but still very noticeable fetishism of children is completely like distinct from that show's appeal. It's kind of frustrating to see it in there because it's like, wow, this really doesn't belong in here at all and has nothing to do with anything. Like, it is...
How distracting is it?
So extricable. Not very, but
you can kind of gloss it over.
But that's kind of why it's so weird, because it's like, wow. Because usually with stuff that's kind of pedo-y, like, it's kind of tied into the... Sorry, it is. So usually with stuff that's kind of pedo-y, it's tied to the material in ways that you can't extricate. And Made in Abyss, you could extricate it so easily, and it would just... And it would... Yeah. And it would be fine. And it's just, like, there. And it's like, why is this here?
This is... I just remembered this, because we saw this. Like, the best movie I saw in theaters this year was, like, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, we went to... Yeah, they were rescreening that. And it was like, oh, this movie is so good.
It is really good.
And we left. It was like, that was really good. I miss...
Remember
I miss
good movies.
Yeah, right? I was like, I miss good movies. Anyway...
It's an entire TV show that is
so
nothing
good.
But trying to recreate the feeling of that movie. Okay. Let's see here. Hazukari wants to know, so, how was your guys' summer? It was busy, as usual. It was really busy.
It was warm.
Yeah.
It was good. We got
summer is such a heavy work time. Like, we work so much during the summer that it's always a blur. It's always just a blur.
We've adopted a kitten, and that was, you know.
Yeah. I did a bunch of conventions this year. I really enjoyed all the travel I did. I had a very memorable trip out to Washington, D.C., and I saw Comic-Con in a day, and we adopted a kitten, and yeah, it was a lot of cons this year. It was good. I really enjoyed it. I like traveling now that I'm not 300 pounds. It's fun to travel when you're not fat.
Right.
Let's see. Oh, that does it for those. Hang on just a second. Let me see if I've got anything else. Okay. This should be the last batch here. Tabifer wants to know, I don't suppose an Ancast review of Hunter 2011 might happen someday. It might. I want to watch it.
It's real long is the only thing.
Yeah, but that's okay. I can still get through it. If I watch it in pieces, like, I'm going to watch Legend of the Galactic Heroes in pieces. Maybe I'll do, like, two Legend of Galactic Heroes, two Hunter, and I'll watch them in like an hour or something.
And then 20 years later, you'll have...
No, but if I did it like every day, or like every other day or something, it wouldn't take me that long. Maybe like half a year or something like that. And then at the end, we can do it. Okay, from Vincenzo, any plans on doing tabletop game reviews for anime manga licensed or related games? Not right now, I don't think so. If you ask me to just make a judgment call on that, I would say, like, probably not enough traffic for something like that, given the amount of work you'd have to put into reviewing a board game.
Yeah.
But it's something I'm willing to explore if I can do it right, if I can turn it into content that people will actually want to read and also not have it be fantastically expensive or time consuming to produce. So
I have no idea if it was like officially licensed, or I assume not, but it's, you know, maybe it was brought over from Japan. But I remember like years ago seeing somebody like made a role play, like a full on role playing book for Trigun for a gun planet Gunsmoke. I was like, I should get that, and I didn't. If anybody ever finds a copy of that, like, I want to leaf through it. Because, role playing a fucking outlaw on Planet Gunsmoke sounds pretty wacky.
Carlos wants to know, most disappointing movie you've seen so far? Valerian.
God.
Valerian is the most disappointing movie I saw this year.
What a stinker.
I was really hoping it was going to at least get somewhere in the same fucking neighborhood as The Fifth Element, but it is like this garish, horrible, like, Valerian.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Listen, I had high hopes, man.
I was really hoping. Wouldn't be
and I even the terrible reviews came out, and I was like, well, maybe that means it's good. Yeah. Nope. Beauty and the Beast, fuck that.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast was also like, hey, the Jungle Book and Cinderella were good, so maybe. And it's like, nope, Bill Condon shits on your dreams.
You know what I bet's going to be good? That live-action Lion King. That's going to be good.
I hope so.
The Jungle Book was great. Mm-hmm. So they have good... It's the same team making it, so yeah. Excited about that. Do you know how many times I've seen The Lion King?
1,003.
I've probably seen it at least 70 times, I would say.
Yeah.
I would say I've seen that movie at least 70 times.
Like a full month of your life.
Yeah.
Lion King
spent watching The Lion King. God damn. Anyway, let's see. Autograph Sneak wants to know, we'll take this as our last question. What's currently the best animal mascot in anime? Kimono Friends don't count. Well, they're not really mascots. Mm-hmm. Are they?
I mean, they're not. They're the whole cast.
What's the whole cast?
The mascot of Kimono Friends is the little robot.
What's a good mascot?
Mascots,
they still kind of, you know.
They still do them. I don't know that they're... I mean, my personal favorite is not new, but like I started like a year or so ago watching Natsume's Book of Friends, and I think indisputably the best mascot character is Nyanko-sensei from that show.
You shouldn't make a lot of merchandise on him.
I always thought, like, man, they make a shit ton of merchandise, and then I saw the show, and now I know why, because he's just an extremely likable character. But yeah, like, recent stuff with mascots, I'm trying to think, like, what shows have them, and it's not really... It's such a 90s thing that carried over for a while and then stopped carrying over. I don't really...
There's that stupid thing from ReZero.
What?
That thing from ReZero.
Oh, that's not even... Like, he's barely in the show.
I got that on my mind. I did an interview with the director of producer of No Game No Life, who is also the producer of ReZero. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting there wearing a t-shirt with a little 8-bit Subaru on it, holding a shopping bag. And it said start and continue, like as a video game, and continue was selected. Mm-hmm. And I was like, And he's like, oh, I can't say anything. I was like, yeah, all right.
Lies.
I was thinking about that, I am excited about more ReZero. Yeah. I want to see, I want that fucking Claude. I want to see what that fucking Claude is going to do next.
Thinking back to it, the experience of watching ReZero.
It is memorable.
Well, yeah, the experience of watching ReZero, like, thinking back to it, is not enjoyable, but, like, thinking about what happens in it and discussing it with people is very enjoyable.
It was an enjoyable show. It was good.
I just have a different opinion. Like, sitting through those Mansion episodes was really,
oh,
really
jeez.
And
I only remember the exciting,
the
crazy parts.
Well, yeah, me too, but, like, the last arc, after he gets through the best part of the show, after, like, Rem forgives him of his sins and he goes to rescue Amelia, that part of the show is also really dull. And it's so, like, it's like, watching the show isn't necessarily fun. It's just a bunch of, like, meandering light novel writing, but the stuff, the high points, and discussing it with people and seeing their reactions and thinking about their reactions and stuff like that, like, is really good. So I want more of that, definitely. Yeah.
Yep, bring it back. Everyone's waiting for more ReZero.
More of Subaru.
More Subaru's crazy
dumb
adventures.
Fucking adventures.
Oh, I can't wait. All right. That's next year, I bet. Mm-hmm. That'll be good. Okay, man, you know what? I think that does it for us.
Oh, shit, I just thought of another one, because it's coming back next season. Sonic the Sonic Speed Monkey from Blood Blackhead Battle.
I was wondering why, if you were going to bring that up. I was going to say, like, what about the monkey from Blood Blackhead?
Right, well, I was trying to think of stuff that had aired recently, and I was like, is there anything with mascots? But no, like, I like Sonic the Sonic Speed Monkey. And I looked for a plushie of him in Japan. Alas.
They dried up real fast.
They dried up.
I spent time looking for one, too. I went to consignment shops and stuff.
They'll be back in another year, I guess.
Yeah, they'll definitely.
Because there'll be another season next season, which means there'll be more plush monkeys in a year.
They're probably just going to reissue the old plush monkeys.
That, yeah. They'll be back out, is my point.
Yeah. Well, you'll be able to get one, though.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey, yo, that does it for us. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you all next week, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob, I guess, for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and YouTube. You know, like and subscribe, all that shit. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.